time to go motoring with James Ward, the content director for drive.com.au. Hello there, buddy.
Good morning, mate. How are you?
I'm good. By the way, I ran into somebody who knows you from another life. His name is Michael, and he works and runs a thing called Mr. Rims, and he came to our driveway and machined and polished the rims of my car. And he said he knew of you. Anyway, so there you are. He did a very good job. Very, very good job.
That is excellent news. We used to use, I used to run a business that had a shared fleet of supercars. And we had one of the locations was in Sydney, based out of Mossman. And we would have someone come and fix the wheels that the customers would.
That was him.
Always scrape. I dare say that's probably where it's from.
That's him. He said he knew you. Geez, he did a good job. Mr. Rims.
Excellent.
Anyway, listen. Speaking of new cars, I've got mixed messages coming in my head. I've got people telling me that if I really want to enjoy my new car, I need to chip it up. And by that, I really mean ECU, electronic control unit, and or an engine control module, ECM.
Yep.
And basically what it does is it retunes the car, talks to the computer, and remaps it. And I'm told that I will get at least another 50 horsepower, that I'll get increased torque and improved fuel economy. So before I go and spend money on this wonderful upgrade, I thought I'd better check with you. James, what do you make of upgrading a car's engine computer?
A lot of people do it. Yeah, and they do. And certainly out of Europe, it's very, very popular. And you see some of these companies actually develop their own computer programs so that you can get a replacement ECU chip to put in there. And again, for those listening, this is literally the computer that controls how the car works. So for the engine, it controls how much fuel, how much air, your timing, all the bits and pieces that you need to get the most amount of power out
That's
of it.
Right.
Look, you will. So usually they are able to demonstrate that it does what they say, so it'll meet the claims. But then you've got the other side of it, and this is where I tend to sit with cars, because I used to be very heavily involved with the Japanese tuning scene, and I had a guy that would literally plug in his laptop I had a Mitsubishi Evo.
Yeah, yeah.
And he'd plug it in and he'd change things and, you know, we'd play around with it and do all sorts of bits and pieces. But these days, I'm a far more risk-averse person because I've dealt with a car, and it's going back to what I said, we managed that fleet of supercars. I had a Bentley Continental that was one of the cars under management, and the MD at the time has gone, oh, let's get a chip in it. So we got this replacement thing, and about a month later, the thing grenaded itself, and we had a W16 twin-turbo Bentley, or W12, sorry, twin-turbo Bentley engine that was dead on arrival, and you couldn't do anything with. And basically, look, the turbocharged engines are a higher risk because you're really putting the engine under stress. But I just...
Okay, but I'm talking about a fully aspirated V8.
No, I know. And look, you know, you can... So, yes, this thing will work, and they do it. And I know people who swear by them, but I am a bit more risk-averse because if something goes wrong and that's putting that engine under stress, then you're not... You are up for basically... the end of the engine. And I think, well, what is this? What are the gains versus what are the risks? And quite frankly, the risks in my mind outweigh the gains. Yeah, okay, you're a little bit quicker off the traffic lights, a little bit, you know, sort of better here, better there. But you're not racing, you're not in competition. Like we said last week, to maybe look at the exhaust system and you know, different resonators and things like that so the car sounds a bit cooler, I'm all for that. But I'm just wary when it comes to chips. But I'd be really interested to hear what some of the listeners think.
Have you ever upgraded your engine computer? I want to hear from you. Was it worth it or was it a big mistake? And how much did it cost you? I'm interested to know. I've been quoted $1,600.
Yeah, it was a couple of thousand at the time. So they're not cheap.
No.
And,
okay.
You know, it is. Look, and definitely. So a friend of mine did one with a Ford Everest. So the what did he have? He had the 3.2-litre five-cylinder in the previous generation Everest. And he said, yeah, it gave him more power, it gave him better economy, so it worked. And it was what you found in those turbo diesels. They are designed to be very relaxed from the showroom floor. So this just pushed it a little bit further but kept it within operational envelopes. But your car's already running in a performance environment. So to up that a little bit more,
okay, you've convinced
my, yeah, Spidey sense goes off.
You've convinced me. I think that my missus will agree with you, of course. Oh, by the way, I took it to an performance exhaust specialist.
Yeah.
And he said, he went underneath it, up she went on the hoist. He said, it's in very good condition. He said, look, you want to fiddle with the resonators to get a better tone out of it. He said, I can do that for you. And it was only, well, I think it was $250. And he said, and I'll replace the resonators with a pipe, and it doesn't jeopardize the car's roadworthiness. It doesn't, it's not dealing with a catalytic converter. It's the resonators.
No.
He said, but Luke, I cannot give you 100% guarantee it's going to sound better.
Yeah.
And then on a long trip, when you're trying to have a conversation with your missus or listen to your
missus,
it'll get droney. So he said, I'll do it for you, but I can't guarantee it. And I thought, leave it alone. And he said, these cars, Luke, were manufactured to breathe. He said, look at these pipes. They're straight. Look at these extractors. And they go straight out the back, dual exhaust.
Yeah.
He said, leave it. He said, look, I know what you're talking about, and I get it, but don't. It's already fantastic.
Look, this is where I sit as well. The engineers here have designed this to be a premium product. And so, I'm always not sure about changing it.
Okay. All right. Mr. Common Sense, I think I'm with you. Just quickly, this is news. The next Toyota Kluga is going to go electric. Is that right?
Yeah. So the reports come out of a publication out of the US where the US where the Kluga is sold as the Toyota Highlander. And apparently they are looking at building. So Toyota's just released a new little electric hatchback here called the BZ4X. BZ means beyond zero. And the BZ5X, which is, you know, the theoretical name for this, is reportedly going to be a 7-seat family SUV, which will be the replacement for the Highlander in the US, which is the Kluga. So, look, it's a really interesting one to look at because that American market is obviously massive for the Kluga. And actually, here's the interesting story. It's sold everywhere in the world as a Toyota Highlander. We couldn't have it as a Highlander because Hyundai owned Highlander as a trim grade. So they had the Australian copyright on the Highlander name. So it got the Kluga name from the Japanese market. So that's why they're called Klugas, not Highlanders. But that's a really interesting step. That is a massive seller for Toyota. You're seeing a lot of change that we're through the Toyota lineup. They're obviously still doing an excellent job with hybrids, but if we start seeing more full electrics come into that range, that's going to give buyers a lot more choice. So it's definitely one to watch.
Look, I'm looking at the recent sales figures, and you know what they are. People are getting shy now of electric cars, and they are going more for hybrids.
Well, this is the thing. Like in Australia at the moment, you know, and again, we've been saying this. If you wanted an electric car, you know, they're new, they're unreal, they're fun, they're fancy. If you were excited first adopter, you've already got one. And so what we're dealing with now is a bit of the sort of a plateau in this growth as the rest of the market goes, look, I get it. The cars are good. I understand how they work. So we've crossed that first barrier. But now people are saying, well, I'll wait until the charging infrastructure is a bit better. I'll wait until maybe, you know, the range or the charging speeds are a bit better and things. So that next generation of cars, which is what we're starting to see filter through now, will be when people, you know, again, start to have a look. And again, we saw there were incentives up until sort of the start of this year. So you were going to get $4,000 off buying an EV, whereas now you don't. So with cost of living pressures, there was a recent report, people saying that they recognised they would save money week to week by driving an electric car versus a petrol car, but the cost in changeover, you're better off keeping your current car rather than trading it on a brand new $70,000 electric.
Go to drive.com.au and have a look at their articles, look at the cars for sale, look at their thoughts, their opinions. It's fantastic. It's one of my favourite websites. And this is the man who runs it, the content director of drive.com.au, James Ward. James, have a fantastic few days. I don't know if you're having the Friday off, but you and I will definitely talk again next week.
Yeah, let's chat next week. There's bound to be more exciting stuff happening.
There's always something. James Ward.